term, and for the next 3 decades tried his best to leave Washington. At the age of 71, he finally walked away. When he left the Senate, he took with him a mastery of U.S. intelligence that no politician could equal. He agreed to go to the Marriott with Carl Pratt, an old friend from a tennis club, only out of curiosity. The Neptune mystery had never been solved as far as he knew. But then he'd been out of the loop for the last 6 years, during which time he'd been fishing almost every day, happily taking his boat out and trolling the waters from Hatteras to Cape Lookout. During the twilight of his Senate career, he had watched Joel Backman become the latest in a long line of hotshot lobbyists who perfected the art of twisting arms for huge fees. He was leaving Washington when J.C. Hubbard, another cobra who got what he deserved, was found dead. He had no use for their ilk. When the door to room 520 opened, he stepped inside behind Carl Pratt and came face to face with the devil himself. But the devil was quite pleasant, remarkably gracious, a different man. Prison. Joel introduced himself and his son Neil to Senator Claiborne. All hands were properly shaken, all thanks duly given. The table in the small suite was covered with pastries, coffee, and juice. 4 chairs had been pulled around in a loose circle, and they sat down. "This shouldn't take long," Joel said. "Senator, I need your help. I don't know how much you know about the rather messy affair that sent me away for a few years. I know the basics, but there have always been questions. I'm pretty sure I know the answers. Whose satellite system is it?" Joel couldn't sit. He walked to the window, looked out at nothing, then took a deep breath. "It was built by Red China, at an astronomical cost. As you know, the Chinese are far behind us in conventional weapons, so they're spending heavily on the high-tech stuff. They stole some of our technology, and they successfully launched the system, nicknamed Neptune, without the knowledge of the CIA. "How did they do that?" "Something as low-tech as forest fires. They torched 20,000 acres one night in a northern province. It created an enormous cloud, and in the middle of it, they launched 3 rockets, each with 3 satellites. "The Russians did that once," Claiborne said. "And the Russians got fooled by their own trick. They missed Neptune, too. Everybody did. No one in the world knew it existed until my clients stumbled across it." "Those Pakistani students?" "Yes. And all 3 are dead." "Who killed them?" "I suspect agents of Red China."
"Who killed J.C. Hubbard?"
"Same."
"And how close are these people to you?"
"Closer than I would like." Claiborne reached for a donut and Pratt drained a glass of orange juice. Joel continued, "I have the software. Jam, as they called it. There was only 1 copy.
"The one you tried to sell?" Claiborne said.
"Yes, and I really want to get rid of it. It's proving to be quite deadly, and I'm desperate to hand it over. I'm just not sure who should get it."
"What about the CIA?" Pratt said, because he had yet to say anything.
Claiborne was already shaking his head no. "I can't trust them," Joel said. "Teddy Maynard got me pardoned so he could sit back and watch someone else kill me. Now there's an interim director."
"And a new president," Claiborne said. "The CIA is a mess right now. I wouldn't go near it."
And with that, Senator Claiborne stepped over the line, becoming an advisor, not just a curious spectator. "Who do I talk to?" Joel asked. "Who can I trust?"
"DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency," Claiborne said without hesitation. "The head guy there is Major Wes Rowland, an old friend."
"How long has he been there?" Claiborne thought for a second, then said,
10, maybe 12 years. He has a ton of experience, smart as hell, and an honorable man."
"And you can talk to him?"
"Yes. We've kept in touch."
"Doesn't he report to the director of the CIA?" Pratt asked.
"Yes, everyone does. There are now at least 15 different intelligence agencies, something I fought against for 20 years, and by law they all report to the CIA. So Wes Roland will take whatever I give him and tell the CIA? Jewel asked. He has no choice, but there are different ways to go about it. Roland is a sensible man, and he knows how to play the politics. That's how he survived this long. Can you arrange a meeting?
Yes.
But what will happen at the meeting? I'll throw jam at him and run out of the building.
And in return?
It's an easy deal, Senator. I don't want money, just a little help.
What?
I prefer to discuss it with him. With you in the room, of course. There was a gap in the conversation as Claiborne stared at the floor and weighed the issues. Neil walked to the table and selected a croissant. Joel poured more coffee. Pratt, obviously hungover, worked another tall glass of orange juice. Finally, Claiborne sat back in his chair and said, "I assume this is urgent."
"Worse than urgent. If Major Roland is available, I would meet with him right now, anywhere."
"I'm sure he'll drop whatever he's doing."
"The phone's over there." Claiborne stood and stepped toward the desk. Pratt cleared his throat and said,
"Look, fellas, at this point in the game, I'd like to check out. I don't want to hear any more. Don't want to be a witness or a defendant or another casualty. So if you'll excuse me, I'll be heading back to the office."
He didn't wait for a response. He was gone in an instant, with the door closing hard behind him. They watched it for a few seconds, somewhat taken aback by the abrupt exit.
"Poor call," Claiborne said. "Always afraid of his shadow."
He picked up the phone and went to work. In the middle of the fourth call and the second straight to the Pentagon, Claiborne placed his hand over the receiver and said to Joel,
"They prefer to meet at the Pentagon."
Joel was already shaking his head. "No, I'm not going in there with the software until there's a deal. I'll leave it behind and give it to them later, but I'm not walking in there with it." Claiborne relayed this, then listened for a long time. When he covered the receiver again, he asked,
"The software, what's it on?"
"Four disks," Joel said.
"They have to verify it, you understand."
"Okay, I'll take two disks with me into the Pentagon. That's about half of it. They can take a quick look." Claiborne huddled over the receiver and repeated Joel's conditions. Again, he listened for a long time. Then he asked Joel,
"Will you show me the disks?"
"Yes." He placed the call on hold while Joel picked up his briefcase. He removed the envelope, then the four disks, and placed them on the bed for Neil and Claiborne to gawk at. Claiborne went back to the phone and said,
"I'm looking at four disks. Mr. Backman assures me it is what it is."
He listened for a few minutes, then punched the hold button again.
"They want us at the Pentagon right now," he said.
"Let's go." Claiborne hung up and said,
"Things are hopping over there. I think the boys are excited. Shall we go?"
"I'll meet you in the lobby in 5 minutes," Joel said. When the door closed behind Claiborne, Joel quickly gathered the disks and stuck two of them into his coat pocket. The other two, numbers 3 and 4, were placed back in the briefcase, which he handed to Neil as he said, "After we leave, go to the front desk and get another room. Insist on checking in now. Call this room, leave me a message, and tell me where you are. Stay there until you hear from me." "Sure, Dan. I hope you know what you're doing."
"Just cutting a deal, son. Like in the old days."
The taxi dropped them at the south lot of the Pentagon, near the metro stop. Two uniformed members of Major Roland's staff were waiting with credentials and instructions. They walked them through the security clearances and got their photos made for their temporary ID cards. The entire time, Claiborne was griping about how easy it was back in the old days. Old days or not, he had made a quick transition from the skeptical critic to a major player, and he was thoroughly engaged in Backman's plot. As they hiked along the wide corridors of the second floor, he reminisced about how simple life had been when there were two superpowers. "We always had the Soviets. The bad guys were easy to identify." They took the stairs to the third floor, C-Wing,
and were led by the staffers through a set of doors.